would you say if I said that I could bring him back?
I guess I'd say I never thought of that.
Well, alright, hold tight, you might want to stand back, because one small John is coming intact.
St. John forward, spitting out some more words, fully intact, jacked, ready to rap and attack. Small John on your lawn, living like a gnome, hit you with my lyrics like a bullet to your dome.
Tonight when he comes up here, he's either gonna kill or he's gonna suck. But there's no in between for Mr. John Forward.
This is John Forward, pre-recording an episode, not live, from the People's Pub in beautiful St. Stephen, New Brunswick, trying to resist the urge to eat my Swedish meatball stroganoff on the microphone. For timeline-wise, because that's the most important part of establishing for the podcast, this is... in between getting my my No Jokes Bard tattoo from Adrian at Serenity here in St. Stephen. Video of the whole thing is up on Facebook. And why would you go all the way to St. Stephen to get a tattoo, John? Well, we've got People's Comedy Night Part 2, or First Blood Part 2, whatever the hell it's called, here. I'm on the show with last week's guest, Travis Boyce, Brian Godso, and headlining it all is my guest, who's not allowed to speak yet, Brian Giles. And looking forward to that, pun intended. I just got the No Jokes Bard tattoo, in case anybody was doubting my commitment to the No Jokes Bard cause, which I feel like I should address. This came up off mic after the show with Travis last week. He was kind of asking me about my episode a couple of months ago, the one with Shand on it. I'd kind of floated the idea that maybe at least the O'Leary's show, the No Jokes Bard Deluxe, what would it be like if that wasn't necessarily a No Jokes Bard show? I had just come back from Montreal at the time, and probably the best show on the run was at the Wiggle Room, which is mostly like, it's a variety show with a lot of burlesque dancers and musicians and stuff. And I was warned repeatedly that this is a feminist friendly show, so be warned. And I was kind of worried how it was going to go, but that ended up being the best show of the run. So I was kind of wondering, not so much that I want to get into the business of policing people's comedy, but I was kind of wondering, like, the No Jokes Bard at the R Bar, I think it's an important thing, and I created it as a show where people had the freedom to do whatever they want, including dirtier or offensive material. That's not necessarily what it has to be. No Jokes Bard for me, I guess that's more kind of what my initial idea was, because I was kind of butthurt that I did a show at the Somerset and Shane Ogden told me to play it safe so that we didn't scare anybody off, and I kind of wanted to have a place where we didn't need to play it safe, which, and again, like I said, that's an important thing, but I think the No Jokes Bard idea or philosophy is bigger than that. I really want it to mean No Jokes Bard. It doesn't mean XXX humor only. Like, I want to have a show where people can do whatever they want, whether that's offensive or whether it's Adam Landry being a weirdo or any number of different things that can happen for a comedy show. I want it to be whatever it needs to be, and I think that's been great for the R Bar. It's a good place for people to try stuff out without worrying about getting in trouble with the person booking the show. I want people to take a swing and a miss if necessary, because, you know, if they don't, I don't want people to not try something because they're worried about getting in trouble or offending somebody or whatever. So I think that's important, but couple of years into the No Jokes Bard run, I got the opportunity to start doing a show at O'Leary's, which has become No Jokes Bard Deluxe. And There's been some great shows there, but there's been a lot of sparsely attended shows also. And, you know, after my experience in Montreal, I was kind of toying with the idea that maybe the O'Leary's one shouldn't be a no-jokes barred show. Again, not that I want to tell people what they can and can't do, but I'm starting to wonder. I'm kind of torn between the comedian in me and the showrunner for me, and I'm asking myself, is something called No Jokes Barred something that an audience wants to see? I know it's kind of the best thing for a comedian, and I wouldn't even think about taking that away from the R-Bar, but I was kind of toying with the idea, and I may have exaggerated my commitment to this on that episode with Shand. I don't have any immediate plans of turning this into, like, Woke Central or anything like that, but, you know, I was kind of toying with the idea of, like, what if there was a show that people, that, you know, so the type of person that might be turned off by something called No Jokes Barred, because that's got a certain stigma to it, especially, you know, in 2018, people have an idea of what that could mean, and some of the comedians that I put on fall into that stereotype of exactly what those people don't want to see, and it's a good thing that the show is named that, because it keeps those people away, but I'm wondering, is there another alternate universe where I'm putting on a show that the person that doesn't want to hear certain things can go to? But, you know, I'm torn between it because, you know, any amount of temptation I had to go in that direction previously has been mostly washed away after seeing a few shows that are kind of the worst case scenario for that. I think mainly as it stands now, I can't do that kind of a show anyway. Like, I can fit in with that. I have some stuff that I would consider offensive material, but I've also got material that the Nanette lovers out there can get behind. I can tell sad stories about my traumatic childhood with the best of them. And there are shows, like in Fredericton, there are shows that steer more towards that direction, and they've got a much younger university age crowd. When I bombed at the Wilser's Room last, it was mostly a bunch of 18, or well, probably not 18, but like 19, 20-year-old students who hated my stripper material, and fine. But there is stuff that I could have done for those people that could have done well, but my main reluctance to put on a whole show more in that direction is that, honestly, there isn't a whole lot of people that are good at it. And there's some people that... And again, I don't want to talk trash about anybody. It's not for me necessarily, but I'm the person booking the show, and to some extent I've got to rely on my own taste. And a lot of the people that would fit into that particular pigeonhole aren't the strongest of comedians. And I don't want to put on a bad show that, even if it does well, just because, like, there are some terrible, crappy audience members that will... Oh, good point. Like, I don't want to put on a show that's only popular because nobody says anything objectionable or controversial. If I could have a show where... Not that it's going to be a clean show or a safe space or any of that nonsense. I don't think that's something that is necessary in a comedy club. But, you know, if somebody wants to see a show like that, then it's not the end of the world if somebody wants to put on a show like that. I've got more of an issue if they want to impose that idea on everything else. But I don't know. I don't want to put on a shitty show. You know, the shows I have been putting on haven't been very well attended, so I'm torn between putting on a bad show that 40 people come see or putting on a good show that 10 people come to see. And again, I don't have a solution. I'll just book them show by show and see what happens. I would say, like, the last two shows at O'Leary's, in September, was kind of the epitome of a No Jokes Barred show. Me and Arif and Splood were on that, and there was about 10 people there, most of them comics. And then the last one in October, I wouldn't call it like a woke friendly, like super politically correct show by any stretch, but the one that Brittany Campbell did with Chanel and Brian Otter and Sam Bartol and Joe Harfouch. Like, again, this wasn't a clean show, but it was very well attended, and it kind of, a big part of the well attendedness was people sticking their head in and like, oh, there's a comedy show going on, and they weren't scared off, I guess. They liked what they were hearing, so that might have just been a lucky shot that night. I don't know, but it's just something I have to think about. If there is some version of a show that's still good, that people coming to O'Leary's can stick their head in the door and not be terrified, then maybe that's something that I could do. But again, the main factor is there isn't a lot of good comedians that I can kind of trust with a show like that. And again, I don't want to get into policing and getting saying, yeah, you're not allowed to say this. I wish people. Yeah, my guest would be an example. I'd put him on, and I wouldn't have to worry about it. But, you know, I wish there isn't enough people that are good and can read an audience well enough to not antagonize people. That's my thoughts on that. Brian Giles, sitting across from me, how you doing?
Fantastic. So, little butterflies before the show, as always.
The radio show that we're doing right now?
No, the show here at the People's Pub this evening.
Oh, so yeah. You don't care about this one at all?
No, then. I do care about this. I think
this is your big moment.
This is a great moment. I love to broadcast my voice. Sometimes whenever I'm on a podcast or when I'm on your radio show, like, I picture people driving down the road and listening to the sounds of our voice and wondering if they're digging what we're saying. Cause like, I listen to NPR and I listen to Selected Shorts and the Moth Radio Hour and Snap Judgment and things like that. And I'm like, I love to hear people talk about whatever's going on.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we'll come back to that. One thing that is going on that's big news on our side of the border, Mr. America, is we've legalized weed this past Wednesday. I'm still 2 months, maybe about, off the weed, so it's been weird. I'm doing okay. I'm not like super tempted or anything. It was kind of funny. I was out on the truck for work on Wednesday, and at 8 a.m. driving down the street on the west side, some guy is in his parking lot raising up a smoky bong to salute traffic as cars passed by.
That's crazy.
Which, I have nothing against weed. I might come back to it someday if I can find a way to be more reasonable about it. It just wasn't working for me, so I'm taking a step back from it. But it is kind of hilarious and lame, just people that are, I don't know. They're too excited about it. It's something that should have never been illegal anyway. And don't be dorks about it. It's just a thing.
I think the thing that people are excited about, and what I'm excited about, is that you're talking about 100 years of prohibition on something that never should have been prohibited in the first place. That's,
yeah.
I mean, I can go out in the evening and drink 6 or 12 or 24 beers. I could drink a half gallon of whiskey, sleep it off, and go to work the next day, and nobody bats an eye at that. Yeah. But you can, you know, you can smoke a joint, and then if your employer chooses to drug test you 27 days later, and that weed's in your system,
they can still do that. I think even in states where it's legal, at least in the U.S., I don't know about
in the state of Maine, it is too. And John, you and I are on the same page. I don't smoke grass. Haven't smoked it for a very, very long time. It doesn't do anything cool for me. I don't dig it. For my personal self, but I do think it's illegal.
I dig it too much.
Yeah. So, I feel like it's a matter of personal choice what your vice is going to be, and I don't think that it makes sense to bar a whole population from.
Yeah. If anything, it's good that there'll be fewer people getting criminal records.
I was fascinated though. I was watching the Halifax news report there, because I get that on my antenna at the homestead, and they were showing the provinces and which provinces had how many legal weed stores, and New Brunswick topped the entire country with 20 legal weed stores opening. And that, I thought that was just fantastic.
And then little St. Stephen saw it on the highway pulling in.
Yeah.
But you're messing up the format, man. I was leading into the song so we could take a break.
Oh, okay.
Unbelievable, Brian Giles.
Okay, go ahead, do that.
You don't need to get. I'm joking. But okay. I'm, yeah. We're going to play the song, though.
Okay.
This is cover of Sweet Leaf by Brownout, and we'll be back with more Brian Giles. Giles just finding out that that I'm off the weed. Last time he was in town, I smoked a bit. We went on a nice walk through the Irving Nature Park, and
those were some crazy squirrels, by the way, at that nature park. They were the friendliest Canadian squirrels I've ever met in my entire life at the Irving Nature Park. They would come right up to you and, like, no fear, like you could put them in your pocket. Anyways, nice hike.
We apologize for getting in your way.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, they would be like, I'm sorry, looking for some nuts. Sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've already given the explanation on the radio, so I don't need to repeat that. I told you the backstory, but we were talking about how, like, the main thing for me going to see that show and coming up with little rules for myself and immediately break in them. You said you kind of have a similar relationship with tobacco. What do you want to tell us
about? Yeah, absolutely. So so I've been smoking since I was 14 years old. When I was a teenager, I'd smoke like pack a day. You know, in my 20s, it settled down a bit, except for on the weekends when I was partying, da-da-da-da-da. And now I'm in my 40s, and I don't really love the idea of continuing to be a smoker, but I find reasons all the time to smoke cigarettes that I don't, you know, I make a rule for myself. I'm not going to smoke unless I'm drinking. And then I find a reason to drink so that I can smoke. If I'm angry about something, I find a reason to smoke. So I'm not drinking now. And my rule is to only smoke when I'm drinking. But now I'm angry. So I need to smoke a cigarette in order to do that. Sometimes I'd find reasons, almost reasons to be stressed out so that I could smoke a cigarette. I know that sounds ridiculous, but you...
Well, that's what I was worried about. I was going to say, like, okay, no more smoking at home just if I'm going out and being social or going out and having some drinks or something. But I decide, if I do that, I'm just going to find more of a reason to go out and do stuff. And again, when you came up with rules like this, is this, like, for me... It tells me exactly how committed I was to keeping those rules. It was just a rule in my head that I never said out loud to anybody.
That's right.
There was no accountability. So if you come up with these rules, do you tell your wife, like, this is my plan?
Sometimes I would. Well, no, I never told anybody that was my rule. But when I explain my smoking to people, right? So people see me out and I'm having a couple of drinks with my friend. I start smoking a cigarette, and I immediately, it's almost like an apology. Like, oh, I only smoke when I'm drinking. Or, oh, I really only smoke when I'm being social. Or I only smoke when I'm stressed out. And none of those things are true, right? Like, I'm a daily smoker. I do only smoke about 2 to 3 cigarettes a day, but...
Do you have a pack on your body right now?
In my pocket right now. Yeah. And that's the other thing. Like, you know, to say I'm only going to smoke when I'm drinking, but then to go out and buy a pack of cigarettes before you go out drinking, knowing full well that you're going to smoke all those cigarettes. You know, that's a thing, like, you're prepping for it. You know, you're prepping to fall. Or say I'm going to be away from my wife for 3 or 4 days for a teacher conference, or I'm going away for a comedy show or whatever. First stop, store, get the smokes before the drinks happen, before I'm being social. Now I'm alone in my truck and I'm smoking cigarettes driving down the highway because I'm like, oh, I'm not going to see my wife for, you know, 48 hours or whatever. And it's not that my wife even cares. She would rather I was honest with her. She would rather I didn't smoke. But she's not cruel about it or anything.
Yeah.
But she's not a smoker. And I just feel it's disrespectful to her to smoke. And it's really, I definitely, and this is an absolute rule, I don't smoke in front of my daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and again, with May being completely sober, like, she's never given me a hard time about it. But, you know, there's that slight bit more of awareness around kind of, mm-hmm. like, I'm not physically addicted to weed. It's more of an emotional addiction, and just, it's a habit. And so, you know, I've heard other people, like, I think Sarah Silverman's thing that is she does it as, like, a treat or a reward, like, after a comedy show, take, like, a bong hit or something, or, like, after you accomplish something. But I just thought, you know, previously I just hadn't had much. It's easier if it's an all or nothing kind of thing. It's easier just to say no more.
I'm done.
And, you know, I might come back to it after a year and just, you know, have, like, if I'm going to, like, I really enjoy a concert more if I've had a bit to smoke. So something like that. If I'm going out and having some drinks, again, I don't think it's something necessarily that I'm going to get sucked back into to smoking every day or anything. And I think it's easier for me to stick to it now that I've said so much about it. So there's that extra bit of accountability toward it. I've talked about it on the radio. May knows about it. So I think it would be that much harder for me to slip back into it because, you know, somebody's going to see me and be like, hey, I thought you quit. And then I'm going to have to
weasel your way out of it, explain your way out of it.
Which I could do to a person, but, like, if I'm going back to, like, I've cut back, like, a lot over the last few years anyway. I think I smoked about a half quarter a month, or a quarter a month, and that's not too bad, but, you know, and I never did it at work or before work or anything like that, at least not at a good job when I worked at a call center, for sure. That's the only way through it, but, But, you know, I'd come home after work and, like some people, have a beer or a glass of wine to unwind after a hard day. I would smoke a bowl or something, which isn't a bad thing, but I don't know. It just, I don't like the idea of having a habit like that and just a routine that includes this thing.
Can I turn the interview around here and just ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you feel like, and I'm saying this because I have a friend who I used to be my drinking buddy, and he quit drinking cold turkey. He's completely 100% sober, has been for, I want to say, like a year and a half. This is a guy who I used to do like some marathon drinking with, right? Do you feel like having a sober person in your life that you care about almost acts like a mirror, that you see yourself through their sober eyes, especially when you're...
Yeah, I'm more conscious of it, just because there's the, oh, well, what is she... Even if she doesn't say anything, she doesn't have to, I'm at least considering, like, I wonder what May thinks about me coming home and smoking up the basement every day.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. And even just like the comment about, you know, I smoked a joint on the way to the sobriety show that I went to. And she was like, really? Like, but not in like a mad way, but like, are you kidding me? Come on.
I got to tell you, so I come from a long line of addiction. And my family has attended many AA meetings. And frequently at these AA meetings, like, that was the thing. They didn't drink booze anymore. But they would have 10 cups of coffee, smoke a pack of cigarettes, and smoke copious amounts of weed. And I was like, wait a minute. But this is, okay, you know? And they're, because their problem was with alcohol, apparently, but they're just masking their, you know, masking their vices.
And like I don't feel the need to, I'll still have a drink every now and then, but that was never a problem for me because, and it's even gotten better since May stopped drinking altogether. Even at the peak of my alcoholism, I would have like 6 drinks in a night, maybe a bit more so if I'm camping and it's an all day thing. But now since May got sober, I feel more drunk after like 3 beer. And I'm like, there's no need to add any more to this. And it's expensive. And so that kind of thing. So I don't feel like, again, but when you're a physical addiction, like full blown alcoholic and you get like the shakes and withdrawal and stuff, that's a substance addiction problem, which I don't think I have, and you can't just swap it out
I'm gonna say this, I don't currently have that issue. I have had that issue when I lived in New Orleans, Louisiana. I was an archaeologist living in New Orleans, and New Orleans is a drinking city, very drinking friendly. Mardi Gras is like a 3-week long drinking bender. And I remember after I'd been there for about 6 months, one day waking up and like feeling really jittery and thinking, oh man, I need a drink. I can't wait till I get out of work. I need a drink, you know? Yeah. And realizing, I was like, whoa, man, I have come there. However, it was like a geographic addiction. Because as soon as I left New Orleans, came back to Maine and I did not have the same behaviors. It was almost like the environment allowed it. You know, and I came back home and I was in the woods and I was, you know, doing my other stuff, and it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah. Well, for the longest time, I didn't even drink coffee. I think I started drinking coffee regularly probably 7 years ago when I won a Keurig machine at the office work party at Christmas. Like before that, and I'm not too bad. I'll limit myself to 1 coffee per day, maybe like 3 times a year I'll have 2 coffees if I need to, if I'm really rough shape.
I'm a coffee junkie, man.
But now it's part of my morning routine, and I can go without it, but I feel myself like being extra super tired, more so when I didn't have coffee at all. You know, I was normal amount of tired, but I could still function. But even when I did it, I tried to not... You know, I just, when I didn't drink coffee, I didn't like the idea of having a dependence like that. I thought it was silly. Like, I saw people that are like, don't talk to me until I have my coffee, and people that are completely wrecked and can't function at all without it. Like, I can still function without it, but, you know, when I don't have it, I'm like, oh man, why am I so tired? Oh,
yeah.
I don't like the idea of having something that I'm not entirely in control of.
So I have every single day, I have 2 Contigo, I think they're 16-ounce coffee mugs, and I fill them in the morning, almond milk, sugar in the raw, and French press Colombian coffee.
I used to drink almond milk, and it was never good in coffee.
I love it.
It's gross.
I love it.
Like I used to drink it, but I found when you mix it with coffee, it just didn't work.
I love it. I can't drink cow's milk. I don't like the taste of cow's milk. Occasionally, if I'm at somebody's house and they offer me, that's all they have, and they say, "Want some cream in your coffee?" I'll put it in there, but I always get this weird like cow's milk fill in my mouth. I'm an almond milk guy. So
I went back. I quit almond milk.
Have you heard about this bullet coffee that people are drinking? It's like it's coffee
illegal in this country.
With butter. You put butter in it.
What? I think I have heard that.
And so what you do, I guess the theory is that the butter is a fat, and the coffee, it allows the caffeine to slow release into your body throughout the course of the day.
Well, there's fat in milk. That might be part of the thing there. But yeah, kind of makes sense.
And then you add something else that I have no idea what it is, some other supplement you get from GNC or something into your coffee.
Do people like just put their own butter in, or is it sold like pre-butter?
Mm-mm. You add your own butter.
Okay.
You add your own butter. I had the great experience. I was out in Minneapolis at the Native Food and Nutrition Conference a couple weeks ago, and one of my tribal cohorts from Hawaii was there, and she offered me some kava, but not like the kava tea you can buy at the grocery store. This was like a powdered dried kava tea that they drink out there, and I had a cup of that, and I was like, is this illegal? And she's like, no, it's completely natural or whatever. But it gave me the most euphoric, melt into my chair kind of feeling.
Yeah.
And I was like, why do I drink coffee? Maybe I should be drinking this stuff instead. But I don't think there's no powdered kava here. You have to go to the islands to get it. Or you can get like a leaf grocery store variety of it that's just like a processed, you know, whatever version of it. But
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's... Do you want to tell us about your song that you've selected for us?
Sure. So the song that I have chosen for this evening is by a tribe called Red, and it's called Stadium Powwow. It's a great tune. I'm just getting into it. It's a tribe called Red just recently. As I talked about on your last radio show, I work at the Passamaquoddy, with the Passamaquoddy, and... there's a water sovereignty issue in the United States. There's a pipeline going across the country, and there's an indigenous movement to protect the water that's happening everywhere. And this music really speaks to that power. And it's got this great fusion of traditional tribal music, which I love anyways, and then like a dubstep. I think it's called dubstep, kind of that goes into it. It just makes it. It just feels powerful, and it feels. It just feels powerful, and I love it, and it just pays homage to the people I work with.
All right, well, let's hear it. I guess it would be time for a station ID if I had one that I can drop in. Or I suppose I could drop one in anyway.
Community Boys. You can put whatever slant on it you like, but if you want to say your name and that you're listening to 107.3 local FM.
Community Boys.
right. We are back on St. John Forward Radio with Brian Giles here at the People's Pub. If you can hear some interference, there's the fridge in the background. We've got an air mattress. Trying to block it out. Didn't block out that burp I just made. There's another one for you. It's the Sussex Golden Ginger Ale. We're getting ready for the show, so... You got the jitters. Have you been doing many shows lately?
No, I really have been. I've been so busy in the rest of my life that the last show I did, I think, was with you.
At O'Leary's?
At O'Leary's, I think, was the last show I did.
Didn't you do Chuckles or something?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Chuckles was maybe the last show. And then I had done a tour up in... I did Edmonston, Presque Isle, and Fort Kent with Andrew Albert, which was so fun. He's a great guy. Just we had spent the weekend together palling around, bro-ing it up with all of his old high school buddies, which is cool.
Yeah, no, I did a show at the military base with him and Troy a couple of months ago.
He is a fantastic human being.
Yeah, he's fun. Yeah, he invited me out to open for him at the Algonquin in wherever that is. St. Andrews? Mm-hmm. I don't remember.
Only about 20 minutes from here.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun show. You've got this show. I saw you post about this show in Lubeck. What's the deal with that? You sound afraid.
I'll give you some backstory here. Okay. So my family hails from Lubeck. My mother and my father both met in Lubeck, fell in love there. And there's a new establishment opening up called the Dragonfly Bar and Grill, I think. Is what it's called. Anyways, the last shows I did in Lubeck were, I want to say, 5 or 6 years ago, right after I started hooking up with you up at No Jokes Barred and doing the maritime scene.
Well, anyways, the R Bar's only been going for 4.5 years.
So it would have been 3 years ago.
Okay.
Possibly 3 years ago. I'm just getting back into the scene, but I feel like my material is pretty well versed. I've never had an audience react to me with either A, absolute silence, or B, with just outright heckling. So I do these shows in Lubeck, and literally, it was like a mob mentality. The entire room turned on me. They wouldn't let me get through. This is what I said. Hello. And they were like, shut up! Shut up! We want to hear some music! And as soon as I got one group quieted, I was like, hey, well, I'm just going to try to tell some jokes here. Can you folks give me a minute? Whatever. As soon as those folks stopped to listen, another crowd popped up from the other side. There's probably only 20 people in the house. And it went horribly awry for about 15 minutes like that.
I take it these people didn't pay to get in.
They did not pay to get in, right? It was just a bar show, right?
Yeah, it's always tough springing a show on people that don't want to see one.
So, I think to myself, okay, so 2 weeks from now, I'm going to come back. I'm going to try this again. I was given another opportunity. I went back to the establishment. This time I'm thinking, you know, I never try to blame an audience for a bad show. I think that's a cop-out for most comics. Oh, well, they didn't like me because they were from Fredericton, or they didn't like me because of blah, blah, blah. So I go back. I prepare. I'm rehearsing like crazy. I'm writing new material. I'm making sure that my material is tight. My transitions are good. Da 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 da. I come back, and the people were atrocious. They were worse the second time than they were the first time. And so I turned on them, and I just started like insulting them, but with everything I had. I talked about how inbred they were and how many teeth were in the room, and I asked them how their cousin's hair smelled when they were making love, and I don't know if I can say that on the radio. Can I say that on the radio?
Yeah, sure.
I didn't swear. And the bar owner comes to me at the end of the show and says, "You're not welcome here again." And I said, "Okay, fair enough." I said,
Turn it around. Did they still hate you?
They still hated
sometimes
me.
Sometimes they like the abuse. And
nope.
Like when I did the military base show, I was worried that like John Forward in front of this room of alpha males wasn't going to do. So I came right out the gate insulting them.
No, this audience did not turn it around. They hated me from the moment I walked in to the moment I left. Barnard didn't welcome me back. And you know, my problem with that was...
Are you going to the same place?
No, different place. My problem with that is that you know, and you book shows, you run shows. As a club owner, as a bar owner, as a club, as a show booker, it's your responsibility to make sure that the entertainment that you have on stage feels safe and that they can perform, they can do what they're there to do. Now, and comedy is different from music, right? So music, somebody starts screaming and yelling, you can have them removed. In comedy, you expect a certain amount of heckling. You know, you don't, we don't look for it, we don't love it. I mean, people always are like, I'm gonna come to your show and I'm gonna heckle you, dude. Like, it's a compliment to me, and I'm like, don't.
Yeah.
Just please don't do that. They think it's the greatest thing in the world, but it's not. But we do expect it as comics, and we're prepared to give a little feedback when somebody starts piping up.
Yeah. It should be reversed, because it's like a band can just play over top of it.
Right. But it's not. And so I think she expected me just to take the abuse. At some point, and when you do professional comedy clubs, there's usually a bouncer somewhere in the house who will walk up to a table that's getting too rowdy and say, hey, can you let them do what they're doing? And I think the point you already made, which is it was a free show. And this is always the comics are always saying this when they're booking a show. Well, hey, I'm going to do this show and we're going to get a cut of the door, or we're going to play for tips or whatever. I'm like, charge more for your ticket, not less, because the more you charge, people are going to respect what they're seeing more.
Well, there's a balance, though. I'd rather have 20 people paying
$5
than 10 people paying 10.
Right. I agree. I 100% agree with
you. So it's a balance. But
yeah, you have to gauge. Like at O'Leary's, for instance.
And that might be the difference between the attendance at O'Leary's and the R Bar. Like $7 is not a steep cover charge, but it's more than zero.
That's right. I agree. But I think people respect it more unless they're there for the art form.
Yeah, nobody's ever been a heckler at O'Leary's. We've got the occasional issue on certain nights where, especially that we're moved to the lower part, the drunk people coming in and like paying cover and yelling in the hallway.
So
there's no door. But there's nobody in that room that isn't there for the show. Like, why would you go into this room when there's three other spots that you can be in the same bar?
One thing I despise when I go to a show as a comic is to be sitting at the end of the bar, watch one of my buddies up on stage, and hear people like, you know, just really, really just piping up. They're just making a ton of noise, and the bartender doesn't come over. And then as a comic, I have to walk over and say, hey, there's a show going on. Can you quiet down?
Yeah.
And they look at me like I'm a jerk, and I'm like, you know, people paid to come see this. And I know what that guy or that girl on stage right there is giving. They've created this material. I mean, comedy is a strange art form because you are the writer, you're the director, you're the producer. And if it succeeds, you get all the accolades. Awesome. You're great. Oh, I'm victorious. And I get to take all the credit because I wrote, produced, and directed this whole thing. Or if it sucks, you get all of the shame of like, this was on you. And so you need someone to people should respect that, I think, more.
Yeah, I had requested a bouncer at the comedy shows at the R Bar, and the guy that they brought in as the bouncer had been there getting hammered all day with his friends who were louder than anybody else in the room. And when there was somebody that was a problem that needed to be removed, he was like, there's nothing you can do about it. I'm like, okay. And like, I politely went up to this guy and his loud friends and was like, hey, can you guys keep it down? You're distracting other people that are trying to watch the show. And he lost his mind on me and was like threatening to fight me.
You're kidding.
No. And so since then, well, and still, I'm the default bouncer. I'll go up and I'll tell people, like, hey, and I start out super nice. I just inform them, I give them the information in case they were not aware that they are distracting and they're hurting the show for other people that want to watch it, and if you wouldn't mind keeping it down. As it goes on, I'll step it up to, hey, people are trying to watch the show and they can't hear it over you. Don't be an asshole. And it goes on. And the bar owner does not mind if I go on the attack. If I have to from the stage, I usually start out nice. And the more I have to repeat myself, the meaner I'll get. And he's fine with that. He understands what a comedy show is, and that if there's somebody that's being a problem, you can't just endure it. So if somebody, like, I've gone at people and they've left in shame, which is the best case scenario,
that's awesome.
And I don't get in trouble for it. Occasionally, the bar owner has even helped me out ahead of time. Like, if I saw, there's one time there was a table of rowdy dudes, and I was like, hey, this is going to be a problem. And he came and he's like, oh, that's my baseball team. And he bought them a pitcher of beer, and then he brought them a block away to the other bar that he owns. So they keep drinking and he doesn't lose any money.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's good to have the support there. It would be nice to have an actual bouncer and be like, that one's got to go. We should, as comedians, at least take a crack at shutting it down.
Agreed.
It shouldn't be bouncer, throw them out by default. But if you've made a reasonable effort and they're not fixing their own problem, then somebody's got to be there to take them out.
I think when I was younger, I used to have this attitude when I was doing comedy that if someone started to heckle me, I would just try to barrel through my material and act like there was nobody talking to me.
Yeah, that never works.
It never works. Because then you just look like...
If you're a band and you've got a PA behind you and a drum kit and electric guitars...
Then do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that doesn't go well. And it's especially, like, I can handle a heckler pretty well most of the time, but especially at the R Bar when there's people that this is, like, they're very early on. It's really easy to get thrown off.
So I gotta ask you this. So I want, so you, like, as a friend, as a guy that I know, my buddy, you're like a pretty quiet, reserved dude, right? Mm. But you're good at this whole roast thing. Like, you can tear somebody up, and you kind of, and I've seen you minorly angry. You have like a very intimidating force about you. Like, have you always been able to like tear people up and like?
I used to be a lot more aggressive as a person when I was a kid. Most of that calmed down when I went off to Bible camp and found Jesus. So it takes a lot to get me going, but when I'm pissed off, then yeah, it's time for guns blazing.
Yeah.
It takes a lot to get me genuinely upset, though. But the roast thing, like, I've always been good at getting digs in on people. And it's more fun. Like, if I'm actually angry at somebody, I don't want to be in a roast with them. Then I'll just get mean and it won't be funny.
The only roast I've ever done is the roast of John Ford.
Yeah.
At the pub down under in St. John. And I was sick to my stomach thinking about saying mean things to people. Like, I was like, I'm going to say mean things about all of my friends. How do I do this? And how do I make this funny? Like, I just can't. You know, you were talking about, in your intro, you were talking about the... you know, having a show that's PC versus not PC and how some comics can't do that. And I find it hard to go the other way. Like, I've just got, like, this little Geppetto, right? Little Pinocchio's little Geppetto on my shoulder who's, like, telling me, like, hey, you shouldn't be saying this. Somebody's feelings are going to be hurt, you know?
Yeah.
Like the little grasshopper that's
Well, that's
there.
Why, with a heckler, that's why I start out nice. And if they've been given all of the information they need to not be an asshole,
Jiminy Cricket,
the gloves
Geppetto.
Come off.
Geppetto right, was the yeah. made the Pinocchio. Right. Jiminy Cricket. Sorry, no, I had to get jump in there.
Apologies to Disney.
Yeah, there you go. They have the money; they can afford it.
But yeah, that's why I usually start, whether I'm talking to them in the crowd or from the stage. I give them the information that is necessary for them to, because people don't know the etiquette of a comedy show. They can talk and have a conversation. It's different if they're yelling at the stage, then they know they're being an asshole. But if they're just having a loud conversation, like right there, they don't necessarily know that that's a problem. So I will let them know politely. And if they know that it's a problem, or at least that everyone else in the room thinks it's a problem and they continue, then the gloves come off.
I'm going to make the most anti-feminist statement I'll probably ever make in my life.
Oh.
Here we go. In my career doing stand-up comedy, and I'm talking about, and I make a joke about a career because I've never really made any real money at it, but in my time doing comedy, I started when I was about 21. I'm 41 now, so 20 years, give or take a couple of years that I took off. The most obnoxious audience members have almost always been women. Like, really drunk bachelorette parties are outstandingly obnoxious. They will, they cackle and they heckle and I'm just like, I don't know what's happening here. Why are you not getting, and even when you start to like try parlay with them, back and forth. That's French. We're in Canada, so I'm going to try to use a little French. They don't respond. They just keep going. And yeah. I'm like, what? Just
shoot. I don't think that's anti-feminist. It's a statement of fact. I don't think it. If you've been on stage and it's just you're not making generalizations. This is based on data.
Right.
And
anecdotal evidence. Anecdotal evidence.
But for example, that has burping like crazy. This ginger ale, I apologize. Sussex to the from listeners. Sussex, yeah. We love Sussex here at St. John Forward Radio. But at the R Bar, the biggest there have been a few drunk ladies. Easter is a notable one that was from way back in the day. She'll go on Mount R Bar. But it's usually the aggressive older gentleman who is like, this is my place. I've been drinking here all day and I've been coming here for 30 years. I don't care what you're doing. This is my place. Like, at the last one, there was a guy that kept having, and he's like trying to say like, oh, I've been drinking all day here, as if like that's so. Like, they think that they're like their one day. Like, whatever you drank in the afternoon is not more than everybody else in the room who's at the comedy show to hear right. the comedy show. And then he's like, well, and I live upstairs. I'm like, you're just giving me more evidence that you're a loser. Shut up. And like, there was one time, like, some guy, like, I started it polite and he was a jerk, and then he started to, they've just got this sense of entitlement. And there's the aggro thing, like, they're not somebody, especially when they've been drinking, they don't want to be told what to do. And even if they know that they're in the wrong, there's this aggro thing where they don't want to give in.
Yeah.
So they'll either continue just to save face, or if they do decide to shut up, they kind of turn it around as if it was their idea all along kind yeah. of thing. They won't give it to you. Like, okay, sorry, I'll be quiet. It's no! And then sometimes they do anyway. They just say that they're not going to. One time there was a guy that, like, his justification for being loud and obnoxious was that he was a veteran or something. And he starts, like, getting his wallet out to show me his card or something, as if, like, I don't care that you were in the military 30 years ago. Right now you're being an asshole and you're ruining the show. Shut up.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they just don't get it. But it depends. And I'm not, like, a very physically imposing person. And, but, you know, it's better if you can humiliate them. Like, the best one, these guys came in at the intermission at the R Bar, and they didn't know what was going on, and all of a sudden the show started up again, and they're yelling stuff out, and I gave them a polite couple of, like, hey, shut ups. And then the guy was like, I make more money than you! And I thought of it in the moment. My response was, yeah, but I it's just because I can't suck that many dicks per hour. And then I just went into how good this guy was at it, and, like, in graphic detail. And his friends were pointing and laughing at him, and he left in shame.
That's awesome. Which,
again, I don't want to be homophobic. It was just utility of embarrassing that guy and making him leave, and
so
it worked.
I got to tell you a story. One time I was at the Wilser's Room in Fredericton.
Yeah.
And I was trying to do a little crowd work, and I'm talking to this guy, and I'm like, hey, where do you work? And he wouldn't tell me, and I'm like, hey, what's your name? But he's conversing with me, but he's being very cryptic about the whole thing. And eventually, I insulted this man. I won't tell you how I insulted him, because I don't want to repeat it. But then as soon as the guy left, I went to the bar owner. I was like, man, that guy was a real jerk, right? And the bar owner said, he's mentally handicapped. And he comes in here. I'm like, oh, my God, like, I just sent, like, oh, like, I felt so ashamed, but I didn't realize. It wasn't like this guy was he didn't appear.
I would say most of the regulars at the R Bar that we've had trouble with are probably have mental deficiencies of some sort, but they're still ruining the show.
Yeah.
And again, that it makes it more difficult for them to not be jerks, but it doesn't make it okay that they're ruining the show.
But I'm uber sensitive about mental disability. I mean, I'm a special ed teacher. Like, I that's what I do. And so I am very aware. However, when you're on stage, you can't see a person's physical mannerisms.
Did you use the R word?
I may have. I don't want to divulge whether I did or I didn't. However, you know, you can't see somebody. Those lights are in your eyes, and you're looking out at a dark audience, and you can only hear a voice, and you can't tell. And you can't tell sometimes whether a person has a mental disease or not.
I see all audience members as equal, and they're all equally deserving of my wrath if they're messing up the show.
Okay, fair enough.
It's very progressive.
Fair enough.
Well, we're at the we're coming up on the end. So coming up this Thursday, October 25th at Callie's Pub, formerly called Callahan's, down the street from O'Leary's on Princess Street, we've got comedy at Callie's. I'll be headlining that one. My guest here, Brian Giles, is going to be skirting his studently duties to come host that for us.
I hope my professor isn't listening to this right now, but yes, I am.
It's for a good cause, making people laugh and bringing joy into the world.
Attendance and participation are only worth 5% of the actual final grade, so I feel like I'm okay. I'm going to be fine.
Okay. Yeah. You're a nerd.
I am a nerd.
And Adam Landry is going to be in the middle for that. I'm sure that'll be interesting.
I'm excited. So. Adam Landry, surprise! I love what he does. He's so bizarre that it cracks me up.
Yeah. That's all I got going on. Everything else is in the past by the time this comes out. Do you have anything you want to plug?
No, I mean, I got the Callahan show coming up. Of course, I will be doing the Dragonfly Bar and Grill in Lubeck, and I'm going to have to get a couple of my Canadian comrades to come down and do that with me.
It's only a two-hour drive. I was thinking about it, but I don't know.
I know, right, and it has to be financially lucrative, right? And then, of course, you have to find a place. I think if I can find a place to crash, it'll be worth it. But we can hash out the details after that, after this show. I'm looking forward to, I'm hoping, I haven't been on the Yuck Yuck stage this year. That's not true. I headlined the show, the amateur showcase, yeah. But I would like to get back on Yuck Yucks again this year. I've been very busy with a toddler and so.
Yeah, I've done, I did a crowd work guest spot a little while ago and that did pretty well. He wanted me to come back on a Thursday so when he wasn't as busy so he could actually pay attention to my set. I was supposed to do yesterday on the 18th for the Kenny Robinson, Darren Frost, Rank and File XXX show, but it was canceled and it's probably because I forgot to mention it last week on the show. So my apologies for not giving it the St. John Forward Radio bump. But I'll be back, and you know, if I keep doing well at guest spots, maybe it will lead to actual full weekends. But if not, it's stage time, and it's a fun stage to do, regardless of my opinions on the organization.
I think that it will lead to weekend spots. You are far better than one of the repeating acts that has been there from Sussex.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's close on that little dig. All right. Thanks for coming, Brian.
Hey, always a pleasure, John Ford.